woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Hello, and welcome to Action Jacks. I'm Tim Al Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 35. NASDAQ Futures down 76. This has to be an anomaly. We're actually down on the NASDAQ. Of course, yesterday was a succession of very odd days in one man's opinion in the market. But I have a nice computer set up here with a whole lot of stocks on the board. I got the Dow, I got transportation, I got the industrials, I got all kinds of other stocks. And other than some of the happy six or seven or whatever they are, the entire machine was a sea of red. And yet we were pretty much up on the day. Transportation average got clobbered. So we're having days like that. The market's narrower and narrower. Matter of fact, we put some long positions on this week in the Russell and in the Qs. The Russell actually did pretty well on it, but the Russell's down the last few days, and that the Qs were chasing. These are two indexes. I mean, really, the policies of the economic policies or whatever of the Fed really are sending mixed signals to different groups of the economy. Anyway, Kevin, how are you? Are you with us?
I am with you, yes, I am with you, and, you know, you add me to the mix, and I would be, you'd make it the happy eight.
Yeah, I have a line for you here to use in your management class that is probably very accurate in some people's minds. To err is human. To blame it on someone else shows management potential.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. The next one is, unfortunately, there is no lifeguard in the gene pool.
That's true, too.
Somebody's are kind of clever. One of the listeners sent this. I have neither the time or the crayons to explain this to you. There you go.
That's mean.
Yeah, that's mean. We have all kinds of stuff going on in the world. I was reading this thing about Trump met with 80 CEOs, and evidently all he did was talk about cutting taxes. Boy, you know, I'd love to see that, Kevin, but how the hell is anyone going to do that?
Well, his deep thought was, and it's actually pretty funny, and I guess when I think about it, it's kind of interesting in many ways, but it's, of course, not going to happen, but we were going to eliminate taxes, we're going to replace it with tariffs.
Oh, God.
Well, I will credit the guy for one thing. You know, a lot of people have it's either credit or criticism. I'm not sure which. People get crazy ass ideas all the time, and you never know. One of them could work out. One of them could be something that's truly creative, and you do. The question is, do you blurt them out every time? Is it brilliant to float an idea out there and see if anybody runs with it, or is it just not having the sense to keep your mouth shut? So I'm not sure which applies in any given situation, but it is entertaining. You got to admit it is entertaining.
Well, I think for a lot of our listeners probably know, but if you were to do an interview on the street. I'm going to say that before there was an income tax, which what amendment was that, Kevin? It was in the 20s, right?
It was an amendment. Keep going.
And
I don't know what number it was.
But before that, I'm going to say tariffs were probably the highest source of revenue for the federal government.
See, so it's just retro thinking then. Okay.
Do you
think it's going to happen?
No.
Let's just say that's an idea that the former president embraces. He gets elected back to office, and thinks that this is a really good idea. Do you think it will happen?
No.
Okay. I'm not going to get my shorts in a knot over.
But here's the thing. What do you suppose if I was in front of the 80 CEOs, and I had some sneaky guy like Ricardo or Andrew or Matt Byrne running around putting like stink bombs on the floor, and I said something like, you know, what I really want to do is raise the corporate tax rate to 35, but I want to make dividends deductible, so you only pay taxes once. You know, there goes all the stock option value. That would be pretty much like a major fart in that room when there were a bunch of stink bombs, even though I think it's an incredibly good idea.
See, there you go.
How far would that one get?
So, that group? So you and Donald Trump, two peas in a pod.
Yeah, well, you know what? As you know, as much as I do not particularly, I'm not a fan of the individual, the idea from somebody outside of Washington coming in there and cleaning the place up some has been a dream of mine for 40 years. You know, not for me personally, but you know, I just think he wasn't ready for it. Was not, you know, he wasn't the what do you want to call it? What they used to call him, the Renaissance man that could come in and actually do something, have people believe him, and not just cause trouble everywhere every time he opened his mouth. You need to get people behind you. I don't know who that guy would be. I mean, Solomon's dead. George Washington's dead. I mean, I don't know who it would be, but I've always had a view that would be really nice if we could find somebody like that. It would be basically beholden to nobody in Washington. And, you know, I don't think it's going to happen. Well, if it does, it's with him, but he's so inept that he doesn't anything done anyway. So, but you know, or I'm not, I don't think
any... You know what, I honestly think he just... inept is actually a good word. It's not a broad race word. It's just that the man had no clue how to run government. So whatever he had whatever he did or didn't have the inclination to do, and you know, Carl will tell you about some of his healthcare stuff just disappearing off of his website, you know, immediately upon being elected. So you know, you can say, okay, so that was, you know, that's one of the promises that just didn't happen. Oh, you know, cool. So we can critique him from that direction. But I would also throw out the idea is the man did not know how government operated. He didn't really fully understand the Chuck Schumer comment about the you know, the FBI or the Justice Department can get you so many ways from Sunday, you know, all of that. I sort of suspect that he has a better clue on that this time around, that, you know, that as you he's had several years now to step back and digest what happened to him, what happened with that whole Russia BS, what happened with, you know, just a whole bunch of things, and, you know, whether I am or am not sure what he would fall for again or not, whether I am, you know, I don't know, but I do suspect that he's a little more tapped into what happened, and I think that's why everybody is so afraid of, and they're talking about him, you know, putting people in gulags and stuff, which ain't going to happen. But I think that's why everybody's so afraid of him taking retribution on people, because I think he probably knows how now.
Well, I also I've seen no, again, I'm not privy to this stuff, so, but I'm just saying, from the outside, I see no inkling of a team of 15 or 20 really good people around him that he is going to all of a sudden put in charge of veterans, put in charge of this, put in charge of that, that can actually do some good. I mean, I don't see that core around him. I just see him shooting his mouth off like he did 4 years ago.
Well, what do you mean by shooting his mouth off? For example, what?
Well, I mean, this whole thing with the I mean, he's a one man going someplace and just shooting. I haven't seen anything progress. I mean, substantive come out of him. Like, this is an area that I'm going to attack this way. I haven't seen anything written by the man. The last time I was in, I ignored this area. I shouldn't have. And this is what I'm going to do. And these guys are going to be in charge. And they do the change. I mean, I'm saying nobody does this. I mean, I would like to see somebody actually get on a radio every Saturday morning, like Roosevelt did, and say, this is what I'm going to do in this area. This is, I've thought this out, or I'm going to, you know, you could write a 1,000-word essay once a week and say, in this area, this is my improvement, this is what I'm going to do. I don't see any guys doing any of this stuff. I don't think they have any programs, either one of them, or can't articulate them.
Have you watched any sit-down interviews with him?
I saw the one.
He's done several lately.
Well, I mean, he's more articulate there than he would be, but I don't see anything that I can actually put my hands on and say, here's the program. And nobody wants to put anything on paper. Nobody wants to, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of weird, Kevin. It's not like, you know, the Adlai Stevens of the world that would actually write a whole position piece and send it to the Senate and say, this is how we should fix this particular area and have his name on it. I mean, nobody does that stuff anymore, which bothers the crap out of me, to be honest with you. I mean, but Biden sure doesn't. I mean, good Lord.
Well, no, because that would require multiple sentences in a row.
Yeah, and, you know, and he...
Which I don't know if that's possible.
You know what, I'll tell you what, if I'm Biden, I don't know, to be honest with you, I would have no idea what to do about the Kamala Harris situation. I mean, I suspect, but I don't know, I suspect the thinking is she's going to bring you a lot of the black vote because she's black. She might bring you some, I'm just saying, on one hand you've got she's going to bring the black vote because she's black, she's going to bring some women vote because she's female. On the other hand is, it's a real issue for people not thinking the dude is going to make it through for the next 4 years, and nobody wants her as president. I mean, I can't think of anybody who does. So I don't know which side of that coin is stronger. Do you?
No, I don't either. But actually, I sort of do, except that people don't know who's really running policy there. And you're right. Nobody wants Harris to be president, so you know that's kind of off the table. And she's not bringing them a lot of woman vote, black vote, any of that kind of stuff. In fact, you know that. Using that as your criterion for selecting your running mate is, I think, pretty cynical, personally.
Well, it's not, but that's why you have somebody there.
Well,
that's why you pick the person.
You pick the you know what? You should pick the person because that person could be president. If that's not one of your criteria, then you're making a bad choice.
Do you think McCain picked what's her name?
Even if you're trying to. You're trying to attract a certain segment of the vote. I mean, we've been balancing tickets geographically forever, as an example. So it's not unusual, and that's certainly a fine line item on your list of criteria. But also, it has to be somebody who is capable of stepping into the office. If not, then you're putting the country at risk.
Well, look at, I'm going to say one of the greatest presidents we had was Roosevelt. And for 3 years, he had, what was the name of the guy who was his VP that was a different part of the, I guess he thought he brought him votes. I forget the guy's name. And all of a sudden, when it was pretty obvious to just about everybody that Roosevelt was not going to make it through his next term, they dumped the guy like yesterday's news and put Truman in there because they knew he'd be capable actually of being a president. They dumped the guy like a hot rock. So it's not like it hasn't happened.
Yeah, well, I understand. You know, you can go back. You can look at all the bad choices. Do you think Sarah Palin was the great choice for McCain to choose?
No, I was just going to mention it.
He was thinking he could court women voters that way.
Plus, she was hot.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, in many ways, she could have she could have been relatable for a lot of women. As a somewhat normal person, and she did have a successful record as the governor of Alaska, but you know it was the cynical choice. It was the choice that said, "I'm going to choose her just because she's a woman. I need a woman. I need a woman with a personality because I don't have one." John McCain.
Yeah.
And so that's where he went. that's not, you know, that's not something good leaders do.
I remember a quote regarding she was fighting with the oil industry about something. And she said something about, you know, and obviously is a conservative. You know, she was, at the time, the conservatives were pro-business. Now, who knows who's pro-business or whatever, but she was pro-business. She goes, you know, every time I talk to these guys, if you don't watch them every step, all they do is screw you, or something along those lines. She didn't
trust I remember that. What she was saying was, yeah, they sit down in your office, they tell you one thing, and then they go out and do something else.
Yeah.
You cannot trust them.
Yeah, hey, we lost another lion this week. Let's talk a little bit about the man. In the second half hour, we'll talk about the world. Jerry West, we saw him in playoffs a lot because he played for L.A., but an amazing player, and I had not really dug into his upbringing before, Kevin, and boy, you know, you see some similarities with some of these incredible athletes in like a horrible home life. It was like their only out, right? What was the guy's...
One of his nicknames was Zeke from Cabin Creek. He was from West Virginia. He played basketball at the University of West Virginia. And he was raised a country boy, to say the least, and with all the for betters and for worses that can go with that.
Well, the for worses were his old man was amazingly abusive. He slept with a loaded shotgun under the bed just in case.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, really didn't was by himself shooting baskets someplace like all day long. He was late for dinner, and the mom beat him up and everything else. I mean, just was a. And he had a kind of a high-pitched voice. Everybody macked the hell out of the guy. But he was one hell of a player. In high school, he was, by the time he got on the team, he was averaging 25 points like right away. I don't think I've ever seen anybody to this day with as quick a jump and a release as him. I mean, you couldn't block it because it was gone in a flash. And you just watch some of the films of the guy. It's like, holy crap, how does that guy... All of a sudden, he's sitting there, and you don't... He shows no body language whatsoever that he's going to shoot, and then all of a sudden it's up and gone. I mean, no. What do you call it? A tick? No trail? What do they call it in poker? There's no expression on his face and his body at all, and all of a sudden he's up and the shot's gone.
Shot's gone. Yeah. Played 14 seasons. How many times do you think he made the All-Star team?
I'm going to say 14.
You say 14, you would be right. Never won a most valuable player, but I think it was five or six times he was in the top five in the voting, and a couple of times finished second. So, you know, definitely considered one of the best players of his time. In that time, always year yeah. after year after year, he was considered among the one of the best in the league. Career 47% shooter, which for a guard is really good for someone who's basically a jump shooter. So that's good. And it was really his last year. He was battling some injuries, so he only played a half a season. Still made the All-Star team from his first half, but had his second lowest scoring average of his career. His lowest was when he was a rookie. He scored 17.6. Per game as a rookie. His next lowest was his final year when he only scored 20.3 points per game. So you were getting 20s into the 30s, for a long time. He was a hellacious defender. If you go back and you look at his college career in those days, it was sophomore, junior, senior, freshman couldn't play. His senior year, sophomore year 28.5, junior year 35.6, senior year 36.4. Those are Pete Maravich style numbers.
Well, as a freshman in the freshman circuit, they were 14-0 with him as star.
Yeah. So an absolutely fantastic player, went on to be an executive, was certainly a big part of building the Lakers dynasty, although there's some stuff from the documentary or whatever, the docudrama that they did about Showtime that suggested he wasn't as in charge as one might think the general manager would be. But as a basketball player, none better.
Yeah, and he was, the interesting part about, remind me a little bit of, Dick Butkus is upbringing in somewhat of a different sort of manner. I mean, Dick was never abused by his parents that I know of.
You probably beat the crap out of him, but keep going.
No, well, but I mean, his dad was a he worked for Pullman as an electrician, and he was the engineer at a big apartment complex where one of my buddies lived, and then the Butkus dinner, and it wasn't as bad as Jerry West, where he actually had to leave the house all day long and just shoot baskets because he never wanted to go home, because between the mother and the father it was a bad deal. But he was essentially by himself, you know, the whole time. I mean, I don't know if anybody ever played one-on-one with him or whatever, but the fact is, it was a total escape for the guy. And a lot of people that are really good at sports, it's an escape for them. I mean, Dick Butkus, I mean, he was youngest of like 12 or something, or 11. You know, the brothers are bigger and meaner than him. I read the biography, and it said there was never anything like a family dinner. I mean, the mother cooked dinner, and then she waited for the old man to come home late and ate with the old man. So she just basically threw, you know, a huge thing of pork chops or whatever it was in the middle of these animals, and everybody dove in and made fun of each other and all that stuff at dinner, and that was it. But his out was to go to the park and kick the football. And he also had somebody's car that he used. He'd push the car. There was a little hill on the street. He'd push the car up the hill by himself, come back down, push it back up. That's how he got so incredibly strong. But everything was football was a total escape for the man, the escape of everything else. And you wonder how many of these athletes, that's what it is. I mean, some people do that with art. You know, they just escape and draw or something. A lot of this stuff is just amazing devotion because you can't stand life the way it is. It's pretty scary, isn't it?
It would, you know, if it takes a little empathy, very little empathy, to really have a feel for that and have feelings about that when you hear those stories. It really is, and there's, you know, there's a million of them happening right now, and
you're
not going to go on to be a Jerry West or a Dick Butkus, you know, it's a really, you know, bad situation.
Butkus could have gone out.
I don't think I can say anything profound about that.
Well, I mean, he could have gone out and robbed cars, but he didn't. He immersed himself in sports, but it was an escape, a total escape. I mean, you know, and for a lot of people, I mean, even people who work all day in a factory. I mean, the guys at Pullman, all they talked about all day was a softball game they had that night. You know, I mean, that was their escape. You couldn't wait to get out and play because it was the one thing you really enjoyed. I mean, you sort of enjoyed your job, you know, because you were good at it. But hey, being a welder all day is not the same as playing softball, is it? it just isn't.
I think being an IT guy at a bank was not as good as playing softball.
Yeah, I mean, it's it is, and you wonder when you see people now that don't have this kind of escape, where they don't have. I mean, let's face it. Even though we don't want anybody to be a male anymore. I don't know why that happened in society, but I think it's important for males, and you know what? I think it's important for females to get out there and actually compete for an hour or so and not forget about, and that's all you're thinking about is competition. I mean, you're not trying to kill somebody. It gets rid of the adrenaline, and all of a sudden you feel better about the world. And I go by these parks. There's nowhere near as many softball leagues there used to be. I don't think there's any softball in Grant Park. We got to have a NASCAR race instead. I mean, what the bleep? I mean, I think a huge improvement is that women get to play. You know, and I never could understand quite why they couldn't, but for years they didn't. Because, I mean, what the hell? If I like playing softball, so do they. I mean, it's not like, you know, everybody likes to compete and go to beer afterward and whatever. I mean, I think it's part of our nature, and to deny it is kind of crazy. I mean, I see kids here that have never played a sport in their life, never done anything. And I wonder what's going on. How do you get rid of the edge? But
well, a lot of it's online, and there are actually people who do a lot of competing via online gaming. It's not the same. The social skills you can develop, all of that. I'm not passing it off as a great development, but I am telling you because I get them. You know, I get them as they are getting older, and many of my younger students, especially the younger IT students. Are very, you know, they're competitive gamers. They're doing this stuff all the time.
Yeah, but you're not using your body for that.
You're not using your body for it. Nope. But you are competing. And, you know, there's even a professional gaming circuit where, you know, some of these people, some of these electronic athletes, I don't know what else to call them, make a hell of a lot of money doing it.
Well, I used to, was not very, never really into it that much, but I used to like go to Vegas before I traded, and I'd count cards at blackjack, and it was you know, it's not near as much fun as just throwing the money out there, because you actually have to pay attention the whole time. But I would never even remotely put that the same as going playing basketball for 2 hours.
No, nope, but there are people who do.
I know, that's just, you know, to each his own, as they say. As we get closer and closer to what this election is and the Fed doing their stuff, Kevin, I mean, this whole idea that we're going to protect this wealth bubble. And as a matter of fact, the British guy came out yesterday and said we're going to concentrate on wealth gain on people. What does that mean? They're going to push the market up? What are they going to do? I mean,
not sure what that means.
I don't know what that means either. You know, this whole, and I don't know what you can do with taxes. I know what Trump wants to do, and I know what people want to hear, including me, by the way. How do you do it when you're, and Janet Yellen, who I can't imagine why this lady is in any kind of, I'm not so sure. I want her. I definitely wouldn't want her to be my grandmother. I mean, what? How does she come out and say that the national debt is okay as long as it stays where it is? Kevin, it's moving $1 million in 34 seconds. What is she talking about?
Well, you know, we worry about the president's mental acuity. I worry about hers, too.
Oh, without a doubt. But, you know, she picked up $7 million faster than you and I ever did. Let's not think she's... As soon as she gets out of this job, she's back on a rubber chicken.
So did the president. So, you know, I mean, just because you're a grifter doesn't mean that you don't lose your softball or your fastball like everybody else.
I don't. He never was on the rubber chicken circuit. How'd he get his? Well, we'll talk about that after breath. SP Futures down 24, NASDAQ Futures down 49. Come back some, as you might expect. We always come back. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamara Ricardo on the board. SP Futures are up 24. NASDAQ Futures up 48. I'm so used to saying up. They're down 24 and down 48. Intraday, we had earnings last night. And guess what? Adobe came out and we're up like 15%. Everything that comes out with these earnings now is just to the moon. I mean, it's really something. I mean, Oracle came out the other night and missed on top and bottom line. They said, oh, by the way, we got some kind of AI deal, and the thing went up 10%. I mean, it's just whatever anybody comes out with some story, it's people are just, the entire idea of pricing these stocks now is just totally different. And, I'm trying to get used to it. I mean, this move in Adobe has, I have like 11 times revenue now they're trading, which... Again, is really hard. I mean, Adobe is, I mean, a solid company, obviously, but now whether they can double, I don't know about that. They're, you know, 30 times PE, but the revenue number just continues to flummox me, because 2000 people got to 11 PE and we crashed, or 11 sales to value. And you know, it's just, maybe it's just the new world, and I better get on the train. Maybe that's just it. Over in Asia, We've got the, how about that, Kevin, on the train. Nikkei up 94.2%. Hang Seng down 170. I did not see this coming. 17,941, especially since the Chinese government was putting money in their place to try and prop the markets up. Shanghai, however, is up 3. I don't think the mainland China market is anywhere representative. The Hang Seng is the one that seems like it's letting everybody know what's going on over there. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 279. It's 1.5%. Puts it down 42.5%. Kick around down 202. That's 2.6%. These guys, that has to be between the time the guy announced the scrap in the parliament early in the week. These guys got to be down like 6 or 7%. I'll check into that. Yesterday, Dow was down 65, S&P up 12, NASDAQ up 59. The bonds were down 3 basis points, 4.20. So that's the lowest we've been in quite a while. Bund down 13 basis points. Wow. 2.35 in Japan, down 4, down to 0.93, which is, obviously a lot under 1%. So everybody thinks these interest rates are going down. These guys can pour money in. I don't know if that's going to happen. Oil up 2 cents, 78.64, very quiet in that. If you're trading oil, you're not doing much. Brent up 17 cents, 82.92. Natural gas up a penny, 2.97. Arbob up 2 cents, 2.43. We've got gold. It has been getting whacked, but now it's running up today. Up 25 bucks, 23.43, trying to head back to this. It's been in this 23.20 to 23.60 range. We'll see if it breaks out this time. I don't think it will, actually. Silver up 24 cents, 29.31. Copper up a penny, 4.49. We've got U.S. dollar against the euro is 107. Now that's stronger for the dollar. It has been like 108. And the British pound, 127. So the dollar's a little stronger. We got Bitcoin, which has been getting clobbered. Back up today a little bit, up 365, 60,000, 67,040. Yeah, Ricardo, what do we got for traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 70 degrees right now with a high of 75. Mostly sunny, breezy, and cooler. Tonight will be clear with a low of 61. Over to Phoenix, we had 85 degrees right now with a high of 108. Very warm with plenty of sunshine, gusty winds, and dry weather bring a high fire threat, though, as well as an excessive heat warning. So beware of that. And tonight will be clear with a low of 81 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, we got inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 15 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 33 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 26 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 18 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 53 minutes. On the sports in the MLB, we see yesterday the Rays beat the Cubs 3-2. The White Sox beat the Mariners 3-2. And the Diamondbacks beat the Angels 11-1. Today we also have a couple of games in the MLB. The Cubs play the Cardinals at 1:20. P.M. and the White Sox play the Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. Also, the NBA Finals Game 3 was this Wednesday. The Celtics beat the Mavericks 106-99. And Game 4 of the Finals will take place today at 7:30 p.m. in Dallas, Texas. That's all I got for you, Chief.
I mean, they got to stay away from the Triple E with the Boston bar near my house.
Yeah. How about the Cubs? 15 blown saves this year.
Well, their closer, is he out for the year now?
He's out for a long time. So yeah, Alzolay's out. One of the setup guys, Merriweather, was taken out early in the season and put on a very long-term disability. So they won't see him until the second half at best. One of their more reliable guys. The Leiter has been up and down this year, so yeah, that's part of it. And then they, of course, have Heart Attack Hector for the ninth inning. So yeah, it's painful to watch. They get all these 6 good innings out of the starter, have the lead, and off they go to give it away.
Well,
I was sitting watching this unfold. With my daughter last night, because we had the power knocked out, so we had power taken
really?
Out.
We were supposed to have all these horrible storms here. They all kind of went south of the city right to you.
Yeah, they found us. It was kind of funny because I looked at the weather. My counterpart in Bloomington and I are doing a joint project management skills training for a bunch of high school interns or high school apprentices, and so it's via Zoom, And I told Dr. Pilastri, who's my counterpart there, I told her that I was going to head over to my office in Elkhart because we had storms in the forecast, and I didn't want to be out on my porch when we had storms, which is where I usually do a Zoom session in the summer. So at any rate, we get to that point. I'm in my office. She's in her office in Bloomington. They had a fire drill, and the fire alarm goes off. She had to leave. So she said, "I got to go. It's all yours, Kevin."
Oh, God.
And at about that same time, I'm getting a text from my daughter saying, "Power's out." So thank God I went to the office, or we both would have been ditching them.
Well, yeah, it's a... Why don't you try and get one of those online PhDs so you can be Dr. Kevin?
I have no interest in getting a PhD. If I were 20 years younger, sure. If I, 20 years younger and committed to the education field, I'd be all over getting a PhD. And that would be if I wanted to be a dean or a vice chancellor or something, one of those types of jobs. But I don't, and I don't need extra credentials. And I always think back to one of the happiest days of my life being the last day of my master's program and knowing I was never going to back to school again.
Why don't you add a name like Dean Kevin and it just be your first name and everybody would think you're a dean?
My boss would probably not appreciate me calling myself a dean considering that she's a dean.
Ah. Yeah, but she's just got to get a sense of humor. You could be like a major, right?
Yeah, I could be major, yeah.
That was a... Ricardo, do you have any idea what reference that is? Two? I'm thinking no.
No, I do not.
In an incredible book, Catch 22, there was a guy in the Army, his name was Major. So they screwed up and they added another major to him, to it. So they actually thought he was a major.
Oh.
And gave him an office and started paying him like a major. But he had nobody to command. He just was a major.
and the only time you could see him was when he wasn't there.
Yeah. He had a back door to the office. You'd go to see him. They'd say, "No, you can't see him because he's in." Okay, you can go see him now because that means he snuck out the back door and he wasn't there.
Right.
It's some of this stuff is almost like working for the government anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, no kidding.
It's
I teach at a public school, so I do work for the government. And sometimes I have to remind myself of that in some very frustrating moment when it's a real pain in the butt to get anything done. That's when I look and I say, "Oh yeah, don't forget you work for the government."
Well, we talked with Lou a lot yesterday.
On the other hand, when you're my age, there are many times that you find yourself saying, the hell with it. If somebody doesn't like it, they can fire me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be doing this for that much longer anyway. So they can fire me and I'll just start handing out carts at Walmart sooner than I planned.
I don't know. Father Fitzgerald is still going strong in his 80s in Notre Dame. It could be you.
You know what? I'll do it as long as I enjoy it.
Yeah. Interesting. I was kind of... always have enough... There's plenty to talk about when Lou's on, obviously. And we're talking about what it would take, for... and you sent me some stuff afterward regarding some people moving into some of these towns in Indiana and so forth. And... When people, when you drop back and you see places in a lot of ways are a bleep hole, like Chicago's turning into in some areas, not everywhere, and you look at it and somebody will stand up and say, "Well, geez, it's all like education or something like," well, it is, but that's a 20-year, a 20-year sort of job. I mean,
it's degraded over
such a long period of time.
It isn't like last year we screwed up education.
No, but I guess my question is, if we were to all of a sudden, they put the four-headed monster, four of the people from PTI, Stocks and Jacks on in the mayor's office, said, "Okay, you guys think you know so much, let's fix it." I'm not so sure exactly how you would, I would need a few months, Kevin, just to figure out how bad the problem is. Because I don't think I even know. I mean, I was walking last night, after work. Thursday nights tonight, we meet some of the people over at the series. I'm walking over and I see this black lady walking by. She's skinny as all get out. Looks like she's on something. She's got one kid in the stroller, and there's like five or six other kids with her. The lady couldn't have been 30 unless she was just looking bad because of the drugs or whatever. But I mean, how much of this is going on? I mean, is it everywhere? It's just a few. I mean, how do you get Tilden Tech and places like that teaching stuff people need today to be employees? I'm not talking about if I was in a high school like that. You know, I'm happy I went to Marist, but if I was in a high school like Tilden, and say even if I was in the college prep program, I guarantee you I would have taken a class in woodworking or something. Or really, I mean, I don't think one is different. You know, I don't think you should just be one or the other. I mean, why shouldn't I be able to pound a nail just because I'm going to college? I mean, come on. But I don't think many people think like that anymore. But how do you take these places that are years and years of degradation? Audrey will talk about, she went to Kelly High School. She goes, whatever you wanted to learn in there, welding, electrician, you name it, home ec, there were classes for it. How does all that, people decide they don't need any of that anymore, and now these places are just shells? Now, obviously, if somebody's going to come here, a bunch of people are going to come here and put businesses here, the human capital is a big part of the situation.
That's part of the decision process. What's my labor force?
But how do you all of a sudden tomorrow say, these five high schools, these used to be technical schools, we're going to start doing that again? Where do you get to the people? Is the stuff there all worn out? Is it all rusty?
You know what? It can turn around in a matter of years. I think if you look at the Academies of Nashville set up as an example, the state was going to take it over. So it takes crisis, but the state of Tennessee was going to take over. And so it was either make some radical changes, or you're not in business anymore. Not in the same way. A big part of the problem is that we go so far to protect public education in its existing form, and that's done as a matter of public policy. So. Because there is no impetus for change, they don't change.
Well, but what I'm saying is, even though maybe somebody doesn't think there's an impetus for change, there sure as hell is. I mean, there are a lot of people here that should be getting, especially if we have if we're gonna be nice to immigrants, why don't we need a place for them to go and get trained, for God's sake? I mean,
that sort of would seem obvious. Do you think Brandon John? You think your mayor? Do you think your mayor is going to go upset the apple cart for the Chicago public school system?
Now, do you think he's still getting paid from there?
Don't know. Wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, this whole idea of the man was put in office.
He's certainly behaving like he's getting paid.
But I don't see how this is in anybody's stretch, anybody's imagination, anybody thinks this is appropriate, that a guy can be a consultant for the Chicago Public Schools. I think he's even going to get a pension from there, but just from being a consultant. Was he a teacher 1 year? And they're going to give him a pension? But anyway, so they supported the hell out of him. They broke, from what I understand, all the rules in their charter about how much money they contributed to his campaign. It's a good thing he won, or they'd have probably gotten sued. I mean, good thing he won from their point of view. And,
yeah.
And all the teachers were manning the polling places for the guy. I mean, now it's an arm's length transaction, their contract. Kevin, boy, you know, sell me a bridge, will you? I mean, how does this even?
I can sell you one. Yeah, I'd be happy to sell you.
I mean, anybody thinks that this guy is capable of putting together a contract that's good for all sides? I mean, how could you possibly think that?
Can't.
No, I mean, and nobody seems to care. I mean, and yet you see a city like this just degrading. You see. 2 weeks ago, one of the aldermen wants to make the curfew downtown earlier for people under whatever age that are unescorted by an adult. The mayor said, can't do that because that's further criminalizing people. They just had a group of how many people stand around and watch two people beat the crap out of some couple, some tourist couple. What you need to decriminalize that? You need to arrest these people. What am I missing here?
You aren't. You just have a really bleeped up mindset there that is costing us dearly.
I mean, I don't see how a city comes back. I mean, the infrastructure here is so dramatic set up for all kinds of people to be working, and for it not, the degradation in the infrastructure, if you don't have people riding these trains and stuff every day and contributing, how do you keep this stuff up? And if you let it slide, Kevin, how do you ever get it back? And what would it take to actually build the subway again, for God's sake?
Well, considering that that you can't reasonably expect to tax to in order to achieve that, because we boxed ourselves in by wasting so much money, and this is national as well. That when you really do need to do something, you know, what did we do? We passed an infrastructure bill that is marginally dedicated to infrastructure, but we didn't fund it.
No.
Okay. So if you think we have, you know, whether it's locally or nationally, if you think we have an infrastructure problem, maybe an infrastructure crisis, and we have to deal with it, and you can't afford to pay for it, that's a problem.
Well, yeah.
And this goes back. Let's just go back to, you know, we'll go back to the Trump years. We'll talk about COVID and all the emergency steps that we took. So let's just fantasize for a moment that those were appropriate. That all the lockdown, everything shutting down was appropriate. It never was, but let's just say it was for a minute. If we had been fiscally responsible, if our government had been fiscally responsible all along, we could have said, yeah, we'll take the hit, we'll spend the money to support people that we have to spend, and it's going to take us several years to recover everything and put it back the way it was, but at least we can afford to do it. But on the other hand, when we were 20 however many million or trillion dollars in debt, and then we're piling on top of it, we can't afford to do that kind of stuff. That's where this, you know, that's where the irresponsibility of government really hurts. It's not, it's the ongoing responsibility is bad enough, but then when you can't do anything about it, it would be like me running up all my credit card bills to the max, keeping them that way, and then saying, oh crap, I have an emergency. I have to replace the furnace in my home, and where am I going to get the money to do it? I can't.
Right.
The difference is that the government will just create the money, and then we're worse off, because now, you know, what's our debt service look like now?
It's almost as big as the military.
Yeah.
And they're dying to get these rates down to make it worse. But, you know, some of the stuff, we had a group the other night, and they're talking about the mayor is, this has been, somebody's crazy idea forever. It's not crazy, but it's just out there. We're going to get a high-speed train to O'Hare. I'm going, now where exactly are you going to put that? We have a train that goes down the middle of the expressway, and there's no room for a third track there, unless you pull a track out of the expressway, which are lame, which nobody's going to do. So how exactly do you do this? I said, how about this? This is people's first link to the city if they're not taking a cab. It takes, I think, Kevin, 44 minutes or something to get from downtown. It's a long way to O'Hare. Now, there used to be a concept on the L of A and B stops, where the stops that aren't used as much, every other train stops there. But now, if you increase the frequency of the trains, that's not that big of a deal, right? I mean, I used to see this when I was a kid. Okay, so why don't we... Now, the Blue Line, one of the reason why we need an express train to O'Hare is because all the people that ride the Blue Line are liable to rob you or spit on you or puke on you or do something. I mean, it's a disaster. It's not as bad as the Red Line, but it's close. Why don't we try something unique? Why don't we clean the crap out of the place, throw those people out of there, not be at a home for homeless, and not have somebody get on there without somebody putting a knife in their face or walking by asking them for money or something. Why don't we clean it up? Why don't we say, okay, we're going to take these five or six stops, we're going to make them A and B stops, and we're going to run trains a little more frequently, so that's not a big issue. And well, let's try and cut the time from 44 minutes down to 37, let's say, or 36, which is a huge improvement when you think about it, in terms of equipment and personnel and everything else. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just try that instead of some incredible five-year deal where all these people get to go to studies and pay this guy off and that guy off to find out that there's no way on earth that we can find another way to get a rail line out there. I mean, what I mean is can't we use do some? Can't we use our heads at all in any of this stuff?
Not allowed. No, it's not allowed. And you start thinking about why. Well, who all's going to benefit from it? So there's a whole lot of people that are going to get paid, and there is no logic to it in that. How do I want to say it? Is this idea of exactly what you're describing? How can you go about doing a proof of concept on something before you ever do it? And again, everybody's looking for the big kill, the one big thing that's going to make the world better. That's not how it works. This works very slowly, step by step, incrementally. And you and Lou were talking about leadership in the Air Force yesterday, and it was an interesting conversation. But I think about that, and I think everybody wants that dynamic leader. But in fact, really good leadership is the ability to grunt through and to have the patience and the persistence to make changes and to start implementing them and stick with it through some false starts, through some successes, but incrementally, bit by bit by bit, getting it. And then one day you sort of look up and you say, holy crap, this has been going pretty well lately.
Well, there was a thing in the Next Generation Star Trek with the young kid. They gave him his first, he was an ensign because he knew how to drive the thing. He knew where all the buttons were. But then his first job to actually do a study where he had two people that were older than him working for him, he was having trouble like telling people what to do. So he went to the two people ahead of him and he said, I'm having trouble with this. And so they said, what would Picard do? And he said, well, it's very simple. He would describe the problem. He would listen to everybody and make sure that everybody had input, and then he'd make his decision, and that was it. The leader has to be the first person on the table with a plan, usually, or at least the first person to recognize the problem. But you always want to
and a vision of what the other end looks like.
Right, but then
when it's all solved, here's what it's going to look like. Now you guys get your input.
Or somebody would say, let people know that if you have the right people, you tell them what you want done. They have to understand why it's necessary for it to happen. But don't tell them how to do it. Let them figure that out, because they're probably better at that than you are.
Well, and they live it, so they're living it every day. So they don't, they already know. They already know what the pain points are. So that's part of it. And my rule is nobody gets to leave their brains on the front seat of the car when they come in. You have to bring. We need your thoughts too. We need your ideas. We need your thought process.
And you should never be shy about saying them. And then,
because a lot of people think they're going to get punished for saying them. It has to be okay. It has to be okay for people to say, I'm really confused here. I'm not sure I know what I'm doing. I need help. And if you don't, if it's not okay to do that, then nothing's going to get better, because people are just going to fake it through the everyday. They're going to, and they're going to try and cover up anything that's going wrong, because, there's punishment for that. There's a whole lot to it, and none of that says that the leader has to be a big extrovert.
No.
Has to be that, person that whose personality fills the room the minute they walk in. It just, there's a lot of great introverted leaders, and that's what, I almost thought I should probably zoom back in and see if I could connect with you and Lou and jump into the conversation, because, this is the kind of stuff I talk about all the time with people.
Well, if you're going to have, if you're going to have input, she wasn't the first, but who's the lady who was on with, she was on CNBC, now she's at, what the hell's her name? Real Attractive Brunette. She was on with the guy who died years ago. Carol Burnett, not Carol.
Yeah, I was going to say, still not narrowing it down.
I think her last name is Burnett. But she,
Karen Burnett?
Karen Burnett, yeah. She goes, opinions are like bottoms. Everybody's got one and they all stink.
I mean, yeah.
You're not interested in somebody's opinion. You're interested in somebody saying, I knew we were going to go down this road with this project, and I was concerned about this one area. And look at all this work I did, proving that maybe this one direction we're heading might not be the right one. And here's kind of the proof, and they put some effort into it. There's a difference between that and just, I wouldn't do it that way. Well, what would you do? Just not, to, you know,
no,
I mean?
No, it's ideas, and you test them out. You engage people. You know, the continuous improvement model is good for as a quality management technique, but it's good for employee engagement and getting people involved, because when people, no matter what you do, especially in an operations world, you have to have standard operating procedures. You can't. You know, I can't say, Tom, you do it your way and I'll do it my way, because our productivity is going to be inconsistent from one person to the next, and our quality is going to be inconsistent. But what I can do is give you and others input into and be willing to test out your ideas, and I can give you that input into what the SOPs are, and based on that, you get to take some pride in the process. And that's really what it's about. And that's why I say you don't get to leave your brains in there. We want your ideas. We just want to, we're going to test them out. Everybody's going to be involved in how we test them. And then we're going to implement what works, and we're going to celebrate, regardless of whether it worked or not, because we learned something every time we do that.
Kevin, we got a dasher, but
that's how it's done.
Oh yeah, I no disagreement there. So if the Cubs continue to show the same problem they had last September, they can't score very easily. Does that mean we're going to fire the manager and get somebody and pay him even more next year?
No, I think. But if I were Craig Counsell right now, I would have my list in front of them and saying, here's what we have, here's what we need. And that could be some stuff that they could acquire at the trade deadline to make them more competitive, or between now and the trade deadline. But it really may be what we need is going to be a much longer haul than that.
Well, this whole idea of guys pitching 80 pitches, six innings, and thinking they did all their job when there's three innings to go, then they get 4 days off, to me is bizarre. If they're your best pitchers, they can relieve somewhere in the middle there or do something.
The Cubs are going generally up to 100, but and think of it, Ben Brown just went on the IL, so that's their other problem is guys are, they have a lot of injuries.
You can't.
So
I don't know, as a guy who's pitched softball, which isn't the same thing, my uncles used to say, you don't have to max effort every pitch to get out the Cub catcher, for God's sake. The guy's hitting 180.
No, in fact, with the Cubs catchers, I kind of wish they could do a DH for the the pitcher hit and DH for the catcher.
Boy, no kidding. SP Futures down 27, NASDAQ Futures down 63. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us, stocksandjocks@live.com.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Money.
Hello, nobody. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Ricardo on the board. SP Futures down 27. NASDAQ Futures down 60. Yeah, we're down, but who knows? I suspect we maybe won't stay there, as we never do. Buy the dip. Carl is on his little machine right now, buying the NASDAQ futures, aren't you, Carl?
Oh, my God, no.
Well, buy the dip until you don't buy the dip,
Oh, well, no. I sort of like the idea of sitting in the essentially the IRX at 5.25. And very sure that I won't wake up and be down, you know, 30%.
Adobe's up 12% last night, and you want to wait 6 months to make 5%? How boring is that?
Oh, Adobe is a, yeah, okay. Yes, I know Adobe's up from their announcement. Do you hear what Adobe has recently done?
Other than gone up, no.
Okay. So I happen to know a bunch of people in the creative arts area, and of course Adobe has been the standard software package for creative arts for a long time. I used to use it substantially for all sorts of photo editing and things like this, right? But so does pretty much everybody else. A number of years ago, I stopped paying attention to them in that regard because they went, like everybody else, to cloud-based, subscription-based. You don't buy... I have a license for CS6, which was the last actual disk that you could get that was, you licensed it for your computer. Okay? Fine. And their license allows you to load it on two computers. However, you can only use it on one at a time, which is fine because I use it on my laptop when I'm on the road and I use it on my desktop when I'm at home. That works perfectly well. Then they go to the cloud system. Okay. Then, of course, nowadays everybody uses these two little letters, AI, right?
Yeah.
Well. Okay. Right. So they roll out a new version of their user agreement that as soon as you log in, now being cloud-based, every time you sign into your computer, you go to use any of these things, it runs their cloud manager to update the applications and all of this. And it pops up with this new set of terms that basically includes that Adobe can use any of your material for its own internal purposes.
That's interesting.
Well, now, of course, the assumption is the reason they're doing this is because they want to train some kind of an AI model, right? But that's not the way it reads. And by the way, what if I say no? Well, if I say no, I all of a sudden can't use any of the files that I created that use their proprietary formats. So suddenly, out of the middle of nowhere, the company shoves this down their customers' throats and says, accept this or the 20 years worth of material that you have generated, all of which is proprietary, all of which is your creative output. It's yours. You own the copyright on it. You either let us have access to it for our unspecified, of course they try to get cute when you question them about it, or tough crap, your 20 years worth of information is gone, literally gone. Because yes, it's on your computer, it's still there, but you can't access it because it's in a proprietary format that only their software can read. Now, Chief, if you think this isn't the game that all these companies are playing and how they're generating...
Sounds very illegal to me.
Oh, does it now?
Yeah.
Well, gee, how come we don't have anybody saying, over here, Mr. CEO, clink, clink, on go the handcuffs. Okay? By the way, if you think suing in this kind of a situation is appropriate compensation... and an appropriate way to get compensation.
No way.
May I point out that an awful lot of people have sued over a number of other things in the last number of years. We just went through 4 years of crazy, right?
Yep.
And some of those lawsuits have been won. Okay. In fact, there was one out in California that was just recently won on these mandates. May I ask how suing somebody helps when you're dead or permanently injured?
Doesn't do much. Well, the best at that was the tobacco company.
Well, the tobacco companies pulled the same crap, right? And now, all of a sudden, we have virtually every large corporation in America that is doing the same sort of thing under this guise of AI, okay? And yet, when we're talking about people who are creative folks, okay, that's what they generate. All right, I've worked around them and with them my entire professional life because when you write software... usually there is a graphical component to it somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, or else it's a pretty dull piece.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm a very good programmer, but I'm not an artist. I'm the first one to tell you this. If you want somebody to design a web page for you, I can do the back end stuff that does the processing, you know, takes credit card numbers and does all the database stuff and things like this. But I'm not the guy to talk to about doing the pretty.
You got to be better than me. If I drew a stick man, he'd be a big fatso.
Well, I'm just saying. That's not my, you know, my capacity and my abilities just simply do not lie there, all right? I'm a pretty decent photographer. But when it comes to actual graphic arts, I'm not the guy. I'm not your man. I'm just not. But that means that I've worked with those people my entire professional life because that's always in there somewhere. And I'll tell you right now, none of them are going to sit there. An awful lot of people probably don't realize that this is even in this new agreement because nobody reads these things, right?
Well, therein lies the beauty of them.
Well, therein lies the beauty. Right. Yeah. You agreed to it. You said yes. All right. And now go ahead and try to sue. All right. After you said yes. This is the kind of BS that is all over the place today. It is the same sort of tying arrangement and you know, attempted monopolization that has gone on in every other industry, healthcare, whatever have you. Just go try to buy a car right now that doesn't have telematics in it. Doesn't give your how many people have been surprised that they, you know, they have a car that they bought a couple of years ago, and all of a sudden the car insurance goes up, and they haven't any wrecks, they haven't any tickets. Why'd the car insurance go up? Well, because the car has been transmitting information to someone else, and that someone else has sold it, identified, to their insurance company. And oh, by the way, you brake hard frequently. You stomp the loud pedal on a regular, you don't get caught speeding, but your driving pattern suggests that you're at higher risk. Here, have a 50% increase in your car insurance.
I was just pricing out some cars yesterday because, as much as I talk about it, once in a while I actually should just check what I say. You know that the base Toyota, not even the big one, the Tacoma, you know, the one the guys are in the desert with the machine guns on them. If you get, there's no stick shift anymore, but if you get the 4-cylinder engine with like nothing on it, it's $36,000.
Yeah, it's so part of the problem with all of this.
By the way, the Silverado 1500 is 41 with a 4-cylinder engine. How the hell do you have a 4-cylinder engine in a Silverado?
I looked at the 2500 series because I would like something with more chassis capacity than my 1500 series, right? There's two problems with that. One is that in a work truck configuration, it's $50,000. Okay. Which by the way,
yeah, but the other one's 42, so it's not that much more. When you think
about
it.
Well, I'd say it's $50,000 though.
Yeah.
And by the way, that's vinyl seats and a rubber floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you get the cloth seats, but the rubber floor, yeah.
Yeah. But the other thing that goes along with this is that all of them have this built-in telematic stuff that you can't shut off. All right. Now, you know, I had OnStar in my truck when I bought it, right? And they give you the free, you know, 90 days or whatever, try to entice you to buy the subscription. And that goes all the way back to the early 2000s. My O2 has it in it. And as soon as the freebie was over, I performed a little surgery on the antennas.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is you can't do that anymore. You can't pull the power to it because it's an integral, it's no longer on a separate fuse. It's now an integral part of the computer's, the management system that runs the vehicle. You can't shut it off.
Well, my brother was saying that they actually they sell a Toyota overseas for like $12,000, a basic model. And that's what everybody, whenever you see all the guys with the bullet belts and so forth in the desert,
right,
that's what they're getting. Now, I'm sure it wouldn't pass muster here. I mean, when guys on the trading floor years and years ago wanted to buy their Mercedeses over in Europe, and you know, go over there, go to Europe, buy the car, drive it for like a month, and bring it over as a used car. I think you at least needed a new windshield and other stuff because the windshield specs were different or something like that. I mean, before you could title it here. I can't even imagine what you'd have to do with that desert Toyota pickup truck in order to make it legal here. Like, all that stuff that you're talking about, it probably has to be put in there.
or something.
Well, there's that, but then there's also the other problem, which is a large part of what's been driving this. Is, you know, you go down the road today, you look at the newer cars, they've all got the multi-segment LED emitters for headlights, right? And you know, LED taillights and things like that. Okay, they look nice. I get that. Now getting a minor fender bender and smash it.
Yeah.
$2,000 a piece. Okay. And this means that now accidents that were absolutely repairable 5 or 10 years ago are instant totals because those components are so expensive that the insurance company, I mean, once you get past 50% of the current value of the vehicle, typically they total it.
Okay. One of these days we're going to have to spend some time in there because I tell you what, it's amazing to me. I would love to know that business because I know people that are in the scrap business usually are very, very wealthy. But I mean, okay.
I have a very good friend of mine he's one of the best auto body people in the area.
Okay.
Okay. And the stuff that he has seen come through the shop in the last few years is, and what they are repairing is unbelievable. Okay, but this is what happens when you have a $100,000 pickup truck.
Well, where I'm going with this is that you wreck the front end and you say, oh God, it's going to cost $30,000. So somebody quote totals it. You still got, gosh, from Southside, you still have 70% of the stuff in there is perfectly good. And if you or I have a pickup truck that somehow or another we could roll over something and we puncture a gas tank. Try and buy one of those gas tanks from a wreckage yard for less than like $1,500. Good luck with that. I guess I don't understand how it's totaled, but now the insurance company just doesn't give that car away to somebody. Is there an auction for the junk essentially?
It's parted out and sold, but not through the regular used car auction process. But yeah, I mean my daughter had her driver's side window in her van. We think it was shot at, but not with a gun. Probably, like a wrist rocket or something like that, or rock. When we were coming through Albuquerque last fall, there's a site online called Car Part that looks at all the yards, and I found the glass for $55 and got in the car, drove it was 45 minutes from the house, and drove over there and got it and put it back in. I mean, if you called Safelite, it would have been a couple $100s.
Well, but I'm saying, I mean, if you total a Mercedes, I mean, the rear diff, the rear axle, the rear seat, I mean, try and find a rear seat in a Mercedes, what are you going to pay for that even in a scrapyard? $2,000?
Oh yeah, because and the problem is that how many people need that that particular the amount of space you need to store all that stuff.
Well, you need a square mile.
I mean that's the problem is you have to disassemble the parts that are good, right? You trash the ones that are worthless, and then you have to store them until somebody wants to buy it. So yeah, I mean that's there's a problem there. But
say they wanted for the. The transmission, $25,000 for a rebuilt or something on his Mercedes. He ended up getting one from Europe or something, and he didn't get rid of the car.
Yeah, well, Chief, this is part of the problem is that, when I went to get that glass, okay, for the driver's door, that same glass was used in close to 10 years worth of GM 1500 series vans.
Oh yeah.
All right. The problem is today is that that headlight assembly that's in that Mercedes is used in 1 year's car, and then they changed it.
Oh, okay.
By the way, it's coded to the computer that's in the car, which means only the dealer can match those two components together. So the body shops, if they want to buy the aftermarket equipment to be able to do that kind of thing, it's different for every make and model, and it's expensive as all.
Well, I told you the guys at the Firestone place told me that the alignment machine, all the resets was $500,000.
Well, exactly, and the problem is that's just for for that, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got these forward collision sensors in the, you know, in the front bumper or whatever. Your bumper cover gets damaged. You know, basically, the first thing that gets trashed in a minor fender bender, right?
Well, and that's why if you try and find a 25-year-old pickup in good shape, it's not like $15,000. Good luck.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, but the thing is, you know, so you buy the bumper cover. It's a couple $100. The body shop guy paints it, which is another couple $100. All right, so, you know, you got $400 into this thing. And then, however, because those sensors are in there, they got destroyed. They have to be replaced. The computer will not accept them without them being recoded. And after you get done with the, you know, the $500 at the body shop, you get to get screwed for another $250 or $1,000 over at the dealer to get those rematched.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's just this kind of stuff is intentional, and it's the same sort of thing that's driving companies like Adobe. Okay, now here's another interesting point, and I know everybody is, you know, all rah 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 about NVIDIA. You know, they just did a 10-for-1 split, right?
Goes up 3% a day.
I'm hearing rumblings in the back channel. This is not out in the public yet, right? And I'm not going to disclose where I'm getting it from, but I still have contacts in the industry, in the computing industry generally. And I am hearing that there is now Slack showing up in places within some of the small to mid-sized cloud providers that bought a bunch of these high-powered chips, these GPUs for AI purposes. Okay, basically, you know, like every other cloud provider, right? You put in the computer and then you lease it out to people. Okay. They're now coming up against Slack conditions as opposed to what they have provisioned, and they're trying to sell these things and finding out that, oops, there's, you know, there's a little problem with the price, okay? Yeah, you can sell them, but just like everything else in technology, just like I used to run into when I was in the 1990s with MCS, if I wanted to sell, you know, two-year-old technology, it was worth 10 cents on the dollar what I paid for it. And they're running into this. Now, it's not out. It's not widespread enough that it's getting any press at this point.
Well, right? It may not.
Yes, it will, Chief. This is going to happen. And here's the other problem you've got with this. As I have pointed out repeatedly with this so-called artificial intelligence, it all comes down to what you train it on. It's not intelligence. It's an algorithm that is very fast at sorting information. That's all computers do. And it's all they will, you know, the person that actually figures out how to make something that can think, we got big problems as a society, all right? Nobody has done it, despite what they all try to claim. No one. And the problem with it is that you get black knighted by people if they figure out that you're using their information to train it. Okay, that's very hard to separate out and to prevent from polluting your output. And if you manage to do it, the cost of doing it goes up astronomically, because that is a human function, and a computer can't be taught how to do it because it doesn't know how to think. So we are also running up against the capability matrix hitting a wall on the sifting algorithm and the capacity of these things to actually do that job. That's not to say you can't do it faster. You can. You can buy a faster computer. Okay. That law has not changed. However, the quality of the output is reaching an asymptote. And when that happens, you're going to see the demand for this stuff collapse, because the utility is there in certain areas. But all the promise, things like driverless cars, you know, you're not going to need a customer service department. The computer will do it all. If you have tried to navigate that crap with Amazon or any of the other large companies or health insurance firm or somebody like this over the last year or so, you know how bad it is. It's terrible, and it's never going to get better.
Well, the issue, I don't ever want to give investment advice on the show to somebody who's not a client, but I have some real issues with this particular company. I think the CEO is a little bit of more of a marketing guy than the CEO, but that's
we're talking about NVIDIA.
Yeah, but the thing that bothers me is four customers are like 50% of their sales. Which
right. And a lot of it's internally funded, too, which is a huge problem.
That's what I'm saying. That was my next thing was we have that video that went around. And again, it's a guy on a podcast, and who knows, but he seemed like he did some kind of homework, and he was essentially alleging that NVIDIA is somehow financing or being part of the financing of their own backlog.
He's not alleging it. It's in their 10-Ks and 10-Qs.
Okay, well, so I'm saying these things make me very, very nervous, and one of the places that I still do some business for and manage money for, the place is loaded with NVIDIA. Everybody's got it.
I know.
And if you don't have it, you know your return wasn't as good as other people's.
Right.
One thing I want to ask you before the break, just kind of.
By the way, just FYI, Adobe is down 30% from their highs.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, they traded at 638 a couple of years ago.
Well, but in the last several weeks, though, I mean, and Cramer, you know, he sometimes brings up questions that are legit. I mean, in terms of, I won't say the answers. How can I describe this, Carl? I mean, we're moving into a different world this time, and maybe it'll be different this time. But as you he talked last week about, he had an article regarding is the incredible valuation of NVIDIA essentially going to start to spread over all these other companies in terms of, you know, NVIDIA is, you know, an awful lot times revenue in terms of revenue per share, but they are growing pretty fast to where you say this company might almost be appropriate, okay, if they continue to double the revenue every year, whatever the hell they're doing. But that's hard to do after a while. You become so big you can't do that. But his point was, now is everybody else going to get priced that way, and is it legit? And his point was, it is legit if there's one company. But
it's not legit.
I'd say it probably. But now I'm sitting there going, okay, does Adobe deserve to be? You know, 11 times revenue is an incredible growth company. That's something. If you and I open up a hot dog stand, that's a massive success, and all of a sudden, the whole world knows we're going to go out for some money, and we're going to have 50 of these places, and the next year we're going to be, 10 years from now, we're going to be the new McDonald's. Well, yeah, we could be priced at that. But now I'm going through the chain here, and I've got, you know, Meta is actually one of the smaller ones, but then there's Google, my list of stuff that I've gone through, and I'm almost stopping here. Microsoft, they're way too friggin' big to be 10, 13 times revenue. And you look at, I got all my Intuit. Intuit does taxes.
Now hold on a minute. Intuit has so far, and you got to be a little careful there. Yes, Intuit does taxes, but remember they also do QuickBooks.
I love the company. I love the company, Carl.
I don't like what they did.
But I'm talking 15.6 times revenue.
I understand it. That's
a company that's going to triple 3 years from now. They're not going to.
They're not. And you know what? Here's the thing, though, is that this is the entire, everything is a service model, okay, which goes back to what I was saying about cars too, right? In that you buy a car, you think you bought a car, and the car is feeding your driving information back to some third-party company that the automaker signed a contract with, and oh, by the way, that information is then sold and used against you. All right.
I don't see how the hell that's legal. But
well, guess what? It happens every effing day, and somewhere in the middle of the, you know, stack of paperwork that you signed before you took delivery of the vehicle, you said it was okay.
What if you say no? They don't sell it to you?
Well, do you even catch it?
Well,
99% of people don't.
Well, I got a better chance now that I listen to you.
Well, yeah. Right. Hello. Yeah. Well, yeah. What happens if you say no? I'm not. No, you can't have any of that. Well, wait a minute. It's integrated in the vehicle. We can't sell you one that doesn't have that stuff in there.
Well, you can always go get like a 95 Chevy, man.
Well, you might have to. But this is the kind of time. See, now, the thing is this. 15 USC, Chapter 1, you know, the old monopoly statute,
yeah,
right, says that tied sales are illegal.
We don't pay any attention to any of this stuff, Carl.
Chief, this is why all this stuff is going on, okay? It's why it's happening in the healthcare sector. It's why it's happening in the auto sector. It's why it's happening in the computer sector. It's why it's happening everywhere. And you know, that this little shtick that Adobe just pulled. Now, there are people, to be fair, I know, I'll be fair with them. To be fair, there are people who have come out and said, oh, no, we're not going to actually take your creative content and use it. Yeah, well, that's, your agreement says you can't. You can say you won't, but what you asked me to agree to says you can do that.
Well, and the fact is, they may not, but future executives there are not going to be bound by that.
Well, not only that, but who says the company won't merge and be sold to somebody?
Well, yeah, I mean, right, when you, I think when the, I should know this before I say something, but then again, you know, who does that? Know something before they say something, right? When the toll roads here went to the Easy Pass, I think it was, since you already pay in advance, I thought, was it 90 or 120 or days, 180 days they were going to erase all the stuff? And now they don't erase anything.
Well, look, our government, when Nix was passed after Reagan got shot, that data was supposed to be erased 90 days after the transaction occurred. Okay, so essentially, so the entire premise behind that law, background checks for guns, was to check and see if you're a felon at the time you buy the gun. Okay, that seems like a reasonable thing, right?
Yep.
All right, so in the law was an actual provision that made it a crime to retain the information. The government is supposed to dump it after 90 days. Well, then, remember Malvo and the kid?
Yeah.
That were running around the D.C. suburbs.
Oh, yeah.
With a car, they'd taken the back seat out, and the kid was laying down in the trunk with a drilled hole in the back of the taillight, shooting at people through it. And so they recovered, you know, a few rounds from the bodies of people they shot. And then all of a sudden, magically, somehow they managed to find all the people that had bought a rifle of that caliber in that, you know, in that 3 or 4 county area, and started going around showing up at their houses demanding to be able to run ballistic tests on the guns.
That's interesting.
How'd they get that information? Well, we know how they got the information, right? Now, that was proved. By the way,
are you sure they couldn't have just got it through sales slips?
Well, but how do you know where to go look? And you know, I mean, as it turns out, Malvo and his little compatriot were actually from the West and had bought the gun there. Okay, so you know, basically, they put essentially everybody who had bought a weapon in that caliber under a microscope and unlawfully intruded into their privacy and violated black letter law, and absolutely nobody went to jail for doing any of it.
We got a break here, but the stuff you're talking about, and I'm not going to pick on Ricardo because I like him a lot. I would say if you wandered into any, well, last night it's a series. It must be intern interview week or something. Everybody in the place is 24 years old or 18 or I think they're 21 maybe to be drinking. If you went to any of those tables in there, Carl, in addition to seeing some attractive looking people, and you started talking about any of these laws, you know, this company really can't take your stuff. They'd look at you and say, why not? They don't have any idea of how that this stuff is actually wrong and it's your privacy and stuff. It's been their whole life.
I have a friend of mine that currently is fighting with Google because something happened with that person's password and access, and they were foolish enough to have a whole bunch of contact and other personal information on their, you know, in their Google account linked to their phone, right? They've been unable to recover it because Google continues to insist that they're not convinced that it's actually that person that owns it.
Okay.
And essentially, Google has confiscated 10 years worth of their stuff.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah, that's real cool.
Yeah, it's not so cool.
You want to know why none of that stuff is on Google servers from my phone?
Yeah, well, SP Futures down 24, NASDAQ Futures down 45. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match.
However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Ricardo on the board. S&P futures down 24, NASDAQ futures down 42. We were down more, but we're coming back. I mean, we're still in a serious buy the dip mentality, at least in some areas of the market. We've got Microsoft down 282. I've got Meta down 239. I've got Caterpillar down 336. Goldman Sachs down 5. So there's some movement to the downside here. I want Carl to comment when we come back on it. Yesterday, even though the markets were going to up, like I'm going to say here, my 90% of my screen was red. All these other, we're moving in two separate directions, whether some stocks are going one way and most of them are going, or not, they're not participating as much. I'm not saying they're going down that much, but yesterday, like transportation average had a hugely bad day, and a lot of stuff happened all over the place, but it was not reflective in those numbers. Over in Asia, got the Nikkei up 94.2%, Hang Seng down 170, 1% under 18,000, 17,941. I don't know, the Chinese move to prop those markets up is doing so high. Shanghai up 3, call that flat. We're in Europe, these guys are down pretty heavy. The DAX down 230, it's 1.3%. FTSE down 10.1, not so much there. Kick around now, another 2.2%, $175. Maybe we'll have Carl came on. Those guys have getting drilled all week after they've had that political issue with the Macron dissolving parliament and doing all kinds of stuff. Yesterday, like I said, our averages, Dow was down 65, S&P up 12, NASDAQ up 59. Very, very narrow. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.22. They were down more earlier. A Bund down 12 basis points. That's a lot. 2.36. And Japan down 4.93, way below the 1.05 or something they were a week ago. Oil up 30 cents, 78.92, still behaving in this high 70s area. Brent up 44 cents, 83.19. Natural gas down 4, 291, back under 3 by a ways. RBOB up 2 cents, 244. We've got gold, which has been flying back and forth. It's up today, up $26, 23.44. Top end of the range looks like it's around 23.50 or 60. Don't know if we'll break out. We haven't yet. Silver up 21 cents, 29.28. They were over 30, now they're not. Copper unchanged, 448. U.S. dollar is actually stronger. The euro is up down under 107 now, 106.8. And the British pound under 127. So the dollar is strong here. And those guys are not. Imagine that. One goes the other one up, the other goes down. Bitcoin up $400, 67,075. Carter, what do you got for us? Trevor Weather Sports. Are you gonna be the new White Sox manager?
Who, me?
Well, you're the only Ricardo
How'd
I know.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, who's going to be your bench coach, me or Carl or Kevin?
It's going to be you, Chief. You know that already, man. It's currently 7:38 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 73 degrees right now with a high of 75, mostly sunny, breezy, and cooler than it has been this week. Tonight will be clear with a low of 61 degrees. On to Phoenix, Arizona, we got 82 degrees right now with a high of 108. It's going to be very warm with plenty of sunshine. There is a excessive heat warning there too, so beware of that. And tonight will be clear as well with a low of 81 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, you got 18 minutes. You're looking at 32 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is 37 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 22 minutes. And Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan is 31 minutes. On to sports. In the MLB, yesterday the Rays beat the Cubs 3-2. The Sox beat the Mariners 3-2. And the Diamondbacks beat the Angels 11-1. And today we got a couple of the games. We got the Cubs playing the Cardinals at 1:20 p.m. in Chicago, and the White Sox playing the Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. in Arizona. The NBA Finals Game 3 was this week. The Celtics beat the Mavericks 106-99, and Game 4 will be today at 7:30 p.m. in Dallas. Also, the Stanley Cup Final Game 3 was yesterday, if I'm not wrong. Panthers beat the Oilers 4-3.
Yep.
And this Saturday, the June 15th, is going to be game number 4 at 7 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Carl, I just happened to be reading this thing here. I don't know if I sent it to you, a CNBC article regarding the Supreme Court justices and how this Clarence Thomas dude has gotten more in terms of gifts than like any all the people he's been on the court with combined in the 20 years he's been there, or however many years. And he's like 10 times more than all the rest combined or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the stuff that keeps continuing. I could make an extremely politically incorrect comment about this, but I won't, because this is public airwaves.
Yeah, well, I mean, but I'm sitting here. Sort of. But this is. I'm just reading. I catch the last thing here, and it's always like the last thing that catches my brain here, and I don't know if my brain is stuck on something silly putty or whatever. Anyway, the group that's been giving him a lot of the money is this guy Crow. What is he's got some huge real estate in? Harlan Crow is a Republican mega donor. Harlan Crow,
right
now, Durbin is in. You know, he's looking at this investigation. These Supreme Court guys. I'll get a little of this. Crow's up now. Thomas recently amended a prior financial disclosure to include trips to Indonesia, California that he accepted from Crow without disclosing at the time. Crow's office said it struck a deal to give the committee 7 years of information in exchange for the panel dropping its investigation into the real estate magnate. Now, how do you get to cut that deal? Okay, I'll give you what you're subpoenaing me for, which you can get anyway, but by the way, you got to drop all kinds of anything that I did bad, and everybody says, okay, do you and I get to do that?
Well, this is, here's the basic problem I have with this sort of thing, all right? I can't find the actual corruption, right? In other words, usually when you have some kind of a quid pro quo going on, it's not all that tough to figure out what somebody got for it, right? You look at the NIH and all these scientists, get royalties on drugs that end up coming out of what essentially are public grants.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Or intern work or something where they're getting paid nothing.
Well, but if you think about how crazy that is, all right, you and I fund basic research through our tax money on things that might be of use in the medical field. All right. Now, the reason I say might be is because the reality of basic research is that you do it for the point of doing it. You do it with the purpose of doing it. Okay. Because it very rarely pays off. Most of the time, you do it to learn something. You're not doing it with focused research and product development's a different game from basic research. A totally different game. Basic research is, We figured out how to make a computer that would fit into the Apollo capsule because we needed one as a result of the fact that it was it was physically impossible for a human to hit that reentry corridor coming back from the moon. Could not be done. Okay? And so as a result, you had to have a machine steer the ship, and there was no way to carry enough fuel for that capsule to reenter Earth orbit. So if you missed, you were dead every time. So the only answer was to figure out how to get a computer, how to build a machine that could do that. And that's what we did. Okay, fine. Did we know that ultimately would end up essentially jump-starting the computer that's now on my desk? No. We had no idea that was going to happen. Right? It did happen. But we had no idea that was going to, that's where it was going to go. All right? This is the same sort of thing. But the corruption that occurs, the corruption that occurs when these people get kickbacks back out of industry. And oh, by the way, it's not just the kickbacks. That's a minor issue. The really big issue is that you and I paid for that R&D, and then we get charged $50,000 to take the drug that comes out of that research. And Pfizer pockets the money. All right.
Well, that's Moderna, right. There's somehow in the hospital gets squat, and the people working on it, and the people who donate it to that particular research get nothing.
And yet, you know, you get it up the backside, okay? And all these people get bribed. And oh, by the way, if you think that doesn't corrupt the decision-making process within the FDA and everywhere else, you're out of your effing mind. It most certainly does.
Well, you have to have a certain mindset. And I, for one, don't have it. But I'm going to say my hero in this regard is Bill Clinton. He could take money from somebody who we knew had an agenda. And the minute he put the check in his pocket, he forgot whatever the guy's agenda was.
He
was either totally corruptible or totally uncorruptible, whichever way you want to look at it.
The problem is I'm not sure. You know, I haven't been able to find the obvious example with the Thomas situation of how this was worth it to this guy who's been funding this stuff, right?
That's been
I got a problem with that, Chief, because nobody throws that kind of money around without an expectation.
That's exactly right. I as you know, this out of the 10 themes of the show that nobody even thinks there is a theme. This is one of my, living in Chicago, and people get greased all the time, or used to get, well, they still do. What exactly are people, how much money are we talking about that buys you exactly what? I mean, is it?
Well, that's, and but this is, but see, this is my, this is the corrosion that has gone on within our society. And the willful ignorance of areas of the law. I mean, this whole thing, Hunter Biden just got convicted, right, of lying on the 4473.
Which I have a lot of problems with, to be honest with you.
Well, I do and I don't, okay?
Well, I don't because the guy's a sleazebag, but I do in the sense that anytime you have a forum where you get to decide whether or not you're an addict or not, I mean, I...
Well, no, that's not how... No, the way the question is worded... Okay, and it is absolutely, there's no possible way that he could have legitimately answered no and not committed perjury. Okay, now, you really need to go read the form, all right?
Okay, the guys who were talking to me about this are attorneys that deal with this stuff, and they said that the problem is he first of all, and one of the guy's daughters knew the guy 20 years ago, and we're talking about a sleazebag all along, and he's into the drugs and all the other stuff. But from what I understand, now recently he's been clean. Now the question is, who gets to say you're clean or you're not clean, and who defines it? I mean, they said it's all very undefinable in terms.
Well, there is to a point. So there's you're right, and yet in this specific case, upon the evidence, you're wrong. Okay.
I'm agreeing with the jury because that's what juries are for. They know.
Well, that's right. But in this particular case, now in the general case, your friends are correct. Okay, in many of these kinds of circumstances. But one of the things I've warned people about for over a decade now, because when medical marijuana cards started to show up, I used to live in Florida. There was no recreational, but there was medical cannabis,
which is so screwed up on top of it because you could buy as much as you wanted.
Well, but it's still federally illegal, okay,
right.
Even though under the state they passed this law. And I warned people, I said, look, if you go to buy a gun and you possess a medical cannabis card, at the time you fill out that form, you've committed perjury because you have a prescription. You have been told by a doctor to do this, okay? Now, whether you gamed it in order to get the card, a lot of people did, isn't the point. The point is, from a legal point of view, you have absolutely committed perjury. Now, the odds that they're going to, decide to correlate these databases and come after you, it's vanishingly small.
I don't think you can you apply for a Foyt card in Illinois, you're not getting one if you got a medical marijuana thing.
Well, exactly. Okay, but here's the thing is, you know, if you go into a gun shop and you fill out that form and you are in possession of a valid, unexpired medical marijuana card at the time that you fill out that form, you just committed a 10-year felony. And that is it. And people would poo-poo me. I was called all kinds of, oh, you're crazy, blah, blah, blah. You know, I have PTSD. I said, look, I'm just telling you what the law says. Okay.
And we know how selectively enforced it is these days.
Well, of course. But yeah. The fact of the matter is that the way you solve these problems is not by ignoring it. The way you solve the, you know, as Thomas Massey was all over this, you know, this thing is blatantly unconstitutional, blah, 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 blah. Oh, well, Thomas Massey, I seem to remember that you're a representative. You're a U.S. federal representative. Why haven't you filed a bill to fix the problem?
Because well, So what about recreational? I can't walk across the Eisenhower. What if I take a deep breath, I'm high. So
well,
someone,
right,
somebody smokes a doob every night on the way home. Now, is he an addict? I could say maybe.
It's not. this is why I say this is not how the question's worded, okay? And this is why Hunter had no way to avoid getting busted and getting screwed by this, all right? Is that what the question is are you addicted? Are you a unlawful user of or addicted to? Okay? And the user of at the time of the question is the context. All right. Now, you could argue that he was breaking his addiction at the time that he filled out the form.
What's the time frame? A day, a week, a month?
Well,
a year?
The problem is this. They introduced evidence at the trial, text messages contemporary with the time that he bought the gun, that evidence that he was meeting people to buy drugs, specifically crack.
Okay. I got it.
And, well, that's perjury, buddy. And
oh, yeah. Right.
But what is
the definition? If I'm off for a month, am I okay?
Well, here's the thing. Am I a user of it? I decided to stop using drugs, okay? And then a month later, I go and buy a gun.
I know a lot of guys who give up booze for Lent. So on Good Friday, can they say they're no longer a user?
Well, we can get into the wiggle. Exactly, where's that context? That's a debatable point, right? That's what juries are for. Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, they had him dead cold.
Okay.
So, as I explained to several people, I said, if you have a medical card and you go and buy a firearm, not possess a firearm, but you buy a firearm, you are taking a terrible risk because if that database gets correlated and all of a sudden you become persona non grata in somebody's mind, you're asking to get prosecuted for that.
Well, you don't want a medical card. You just want to buy it from somebody who has a medical card because they can buy as much as they want.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it all comes down to traceability, right?
Can I switch gears for here on you? Because I have a... Sure.
Yeah, we got 10 minutes. Let's go.
And I want your opinion. As I stared at the screen yesterday and saw nothing but red, and yet averages are all up, I've been, obviously I've been ragging on the show now for years about I don't trust markets that... the good news is bad news and bad news is good years, and I don't trust markets that are very narrow in terms of their advance.
Right.
Yet I've been saying that for a decade now. And the question is, given the favoritism in terms of you're always the guy saying if some people can borrow less than the inflation rate, you can never stop them, and the other people who can't are never going to catch up. Now the question is, do we have, I'll say, 20 or 25 companies, and I'll put the Home Depot in there, and maybe even Lowe's, although they're not as big as Home Depot, and put them in there and just say, guys, get on these 25 horses, and my brother has people that, we have clients that want a lot of really good dividend stocks, and he put together a group for these guys, and we do a lot of good work here at PTA, but yet at the middle of the day, the end of the year, is anybody happy with their dividend stocks this year? I doubt it. You get your dividends, but they're not going anywhere, or haven't been. You could have telephone up your behind, and it's not going anywhere. I mean, same thing. All these stocks are allegedly good stocks, where they actually make money and give you some. Now, are we talking about, I'll use the term, fascist sort of economy. I'm not talking about Adolf Hitler. I'm saying, are we going to have you know, 80 stocks that are going to be the only stocks in all the big industries with their nose firmly up the ass of government, and everybody else is just bumping along in their wake. It looks like that's, I'm not so sure how much longer I can say that's not going to be the future, because damn it, Carl, it looks like it is.
Well, my problem with this kind of a thing is that I saw the same pattern in 1998 and 1999.
So did I, but we're
and it
way...
blew up, okay? And I saw the same pattern in, you know, in 2006 and 2007, and it blew up. And now, all of a sudden, you know, this always happens. Look, I sold MCS, and for a year, I had people that were telling me how stupid I was to have done that. That what I should have done is taken the company public, and by God, you know, I would have $1 billion. Okay, but $1 billion is a lot more money then than it is now. And that was the, you know, that was the path. And oh, by the way, if you look at the inversion in the term structure in the bond market, which is of course, you know, much bigger and harder to play with than individual stocks are, you'll notice that IRX TNX ratio is now below -10 again this morning. For those people that believe that this has a happy ending, that it's permanent, that it can be maintained forever, that there is no huge crash coming at the end of this party. If you don't think the curtains are going to get lit on fire and the door is going to be very wee and a lot of people going to try to go through it all at once, then you need to explain why it is that people are willing to buy a 10-year bond that pays 4.2% when they can have another full percent in the 13-week bill.
Okay, I'll use the term spouting the stuff that I believe. My question is, I'm wondering if maybe I'm wrong. Now, if you look at what happened in 2000...
Well, if you're wrong, everybody in the bond market's wrong.
Okay, but I'm saying in 2000... The difference, I think, might be, and boy, you know, I'm going on a ledge here. The difference, I think, might be, Carl, is the stuff, the bad, I'll use the term, the traditionally bad management being done by people's central banks is so coordinated now that it could be different this time. And here's my example.
Chief, you're saying this is never going to unwind.
No, I didn't say that. I'm trying to...
Yes, you are.
No, I'm trying to drag knowledge out of your head that I know is there. Okay, and in 1999, and here's a subtle difference. And by the way, I'm with you that someday there's a cliff. But in 1999, as you recall better than most, the Fed was pouring money into the place because they thought everything was going to fall apart.
They thought it was all going to blow up when Y2K happened. Right.
But it was totally separate from the stock market. It just happened to correspond to every dot-bomb stock in the world going to the moon. I think the last 10% push, maybe even more, in the market was the Fed putting that money in that, by the way, doesn't really work its way through to the you know, the first part of 2000, which is really was like the tops were, right, the first half of 2000. But the Fed in those days, Calvin, here's the question I'm having for you. They said, okay, we put money in for Y2K. It didn't happen. And they started to suck the money back out. So, to say, well, look, it shouldn't have been in here in the first place. Guess what? Why don't we pull it out? Well, most people, you know, might think that's somewhat logical, right? So they did, and all of a sudden, the market went flying down. Now, the same thing in 2007, 2008, there were all kinds of other factors where things were being pushed up, and all of a sudden, this money coming in from Japan that people were borrowing was blowing up this real estate market. There was this huge influx of cash. Now, this time, I'm going to say it's even worse. We have this COVID situation. We blow up the money supply 40%. But you know right. what? You know what? They're not making the mistake. They're not doing the same thing and saying, well, wait a minute. We got way too much in here. We need to pull some of this out. They're not. They're very aware now worldwide that this wealth bubble is something we want to keep. And you know what? I agree with you that they're going to keep pushing it to where it gets to be totally unsustainable. I mean, maybe Microsoft can be 14 times revenue. I don't think it's going to be 30. But what I'm saying is it is different. They're not. This guy gets on the other day. He can talk about inflation all he wants. The only thing he's telling you is that going forward, we're going to try and manage inflation somewhere between 2 and 3%. He's not addressing at all the fiasco of the last 4 years and the price levels that nobody can deal with.
It's but the problem is, Chief, is that you've got, all right, so you have a 30% roughly fiscal deficit running right now, okay?
Okay.
On a GDP basis, that's a 6% GDP hit. Okay, that's what that
you.
That's what it is.
Yeah,
6%. All right. Now, what you're saying, what in order for this to be sustainable, you're saying that everybody who is on the longer end of the bond market, everyone, is willing to take a 2% per year compounded loss.
They've been doing it for 10 years, 15 years.
Chief, that's a 30% loss.
I know, what do you think has been happening since 2007?
Well, now, wait a minute. But you're saying that this is a permanently sustainable situation.
I didn't say that, but we both are.
Well, this is what the market's saying. That's what okay.
I know, and the reason why the market's saying is that it has been.
Well, right, because every time.
You know how hard it is for me to disagree with you when I agree with you?
Chief, every time.
I mean, just in general.
Especially since 2007 and arguably all the way back to 2000. Every single time that the market has sneezed, the Fed has turned around and the federal government has turned around and thrown more at the problem.
Right.
Okay? That's and I mean, it's Pavlov's dog, right? I mean, eventually, you just have to get within 10 feet of the fridge and the dog starts salivating.
Like I said, it's very difficult for me to argue because I'm on your side. But my point is, why hasn't it happened already? Why are they better at it this time? It happened right away in 2000.
Because there's no way to know. Look, there's no way to know when this thing is going to blow. All right.
It blew right away then. It blew right away in 2007.
Okay, you know what? No, it didn't blow right away in 2007.
It was a year.
Boy, yeah. you have been, you know what? You're old enough and you've been around long enough. You know darn well it did not blow in 2007. But 2007 was that whole thing started with those two little hedge funds that got in trouble that Bear was running.
Yeah, we had a client that lost $1 million one of those.
Yeah, well, you know, if you were on the wrong side of that one, all your money went poof, right? And then Bear Stearns itself blows, okay? And if you remember, infamously, Cramer was on TV saying, oh, everything's fine, no problem. Bernanke, subprime is contained, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Mozilla, all over the airwaves every single night on CNBC, you know, every third day, that he's going to own the entire subprime mortgage market. All the rest of these guys are in trouble, but he's not. Everything's going to be fine. Countrywide Financial is going to the moon, Alice. And ooh, boy, you know, it was about a year,
well,
right?
Last question, because we're going to fight about this. And we're not fighting about it. I'm just trying to drag out why. Is it possible that some of these companies have gotten so big that if we go into 10% recession, Microsoft's just powerful enough to say, screw it, we're raising prices 12%, we're okay?
No.
I hope you're right. I mean, you're right.
And by the way, the longer this goes on, the worse it's going to be.
I'm with you.
I was looking at 60 or 70% drawdown. I think we could see 90 now.
Right. Next week, we'll find a subject where you agree with me, yet you try and get the other side out of me.
Hey, you know what? It's fun. You got to have good radio, right?
But you know, it's all about why. I mean, if you and I were on national TV, the first thing I'd say is, okay, you guys have been allegedly right for 5 years. Why hasn't it happened? And that's
well,
a legitimate.
But you take a look at like these guys talking about how, you know, when Roaring Kitty does his thing, you know, the GameStop's going to $90. They don't understand market structure and what people have actually done, and they think that he can force a gamma squeeze and, you know, make their stock go to the moon.
Well, the latest was of it. Latest was around right at 20. He really had people by the balls. I'm like, what are you talking
about? Well, not only that, you know, what actually happened was that the company got smart and issued into it, and now they have, you know, a few billion dollars in cash sitting on their balance sheet.
Well, have a nice weekend, bud. We'll live the fight again on Tuesday, and SP Futures down 24, NASDAQ Futures down 45. Be back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.